This episode of Nerd and Tie was sponsored by Paul Langland. If you'd like to sponsor Nerd and Tie, you can do that by going to nerdandtie.com, or if you feel like contributing to our legal fund, go to gofundme.com/nerdandtie. Paul Langland, from the Langland, the land of Langs.
On this, the last episode of Nerd and Tie for 2016, Sinequa Martin Green will star in Star Trek Discovery. David Ayer is going to be directing Gotham City Sirens. Trey and I saw Rogue One, and we're going to talk about it. We have trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Anime Apocalypse is shutting it down, and we read your mail. All this and more on Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
And welcome, everybody, to the final episode of Nerd and Tie in 2016. It is December.
Final proper episode.
It's currently December 18th, and as we record every fortnight, the next episode we do will be in 2017. So we're just here, at least where I am, on a negative 10 degree night, not including the wind chill, indoors, bundled up, because it's very cold.
Yeah.
But I am Professor Fur, one of your hosts. With me, also freezing in the southeastern part of Wisconsin, is Nick Azumi.
My neck and shoulders are in so much pain. I have shoveled more times than I care to remember right now.
And also, I'm assuming freezing.
It's a nice balmy 12 degrees here.
So only slightly warmer than we are. Actually, even slightly. That's a good like 25 degree swing from where
I am. That's
right,
more than slight.
It's amazing here. I went outside without a hat on.
Welcome to this Fortnite's episode of Nerd Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. We got a lot of stuff to talk about these 2 weeks. Of course, trailers, the probably most anticipated movie of 2017, at least the second half of 2017 came out, or 2016 rather, came out this weekend. And we got a lot of good trailers, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stuff's been happening. We're going to talk about it. In fact, let's
stuff
just jump right into it right now. Of course, anytime a character from The Walking Dead gets cast in another project, you pretty much argue about how much longer they're going to last on the show. And well, now that speculation has started because it's just been announced that Sinequa Martin Green has been cast as the lead in Star Trek Discovery. Of course, Martin Green plays a regular on The Walking Dead, has since season three. I had to think once you jumped in there for a moment. Has played Sasha since season three, and they've now cast her as the lead in Star Trek Discovery. Not the captain, though. She's going to be playing the lieutenant commander. Of course, we have the captain role already.
Yeah, captain is going to be played by Michelle Yeoh.
Sounds like Green's going to be the main character of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, that's always been thing.
I'm still so amused because, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, the week before Michelle Yeoh was announced, I was just thinking back and being like, Michelle Yeoh hasn't been in anything recently. I would love to see her in, like, anything. And then they're like, oh, she's the captain on Star Trek. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's... So Sinequa Martin Green's character, I don't think they've released the character's name yet, but she's going to be a lieutenant commander.
The first officer, right?
I don't...
I was of the understanding.
Yeah, I don't...
Yeah.
Well, no, she may be the first... I did not know whether or not she was that. I did not know that. But lieutenant commander makes sense. Spock was a lieutenant commander at... Well, Spock may have been a lieutenant commander according to his costume, according to early... Star Trek, and then got promoted, or it was just a costuming error the whole time, and he was a commander the whole time, depending on who you talk to. Canon is confusing on the matter, because no one can decide whether or not he actually got promoted, or if it was just a mistake. But either way, like, Lieutenant Commander...
And from classic Trek, there's no consistency.
No. Well, the fact that Enlisted had the same collars as Ensigns made it really hard to figure stuff out.
So, but the writers on The Walking Dead have said that they're not going to do anything with Sasha. She's staying put.
Well, it's hard to say because Star Trek Discovery is going to be 13 episodes, and so and shot in Toronto, which is a little far from, you know, Georgia, but it's the same, like, it's not like it's Vancouver far, and it's, like, so the actress who plays Alicia on Fear the Walking Dead played a major role on the 100 for two seasons while she was on, and she still is on Fear the Walking Dead, she's no longer on the 100, but, like, her character... Like, she did both The 100 and Fear the Walking Dead for a couple seasons at the same time. So, I think it's, because it's a shorter show, I think it's possible that she'll keep doing both.
Especially since, correct me if I'm wrong, because Discovery is only going to be released on the CBS streaming platform, correct?
On All Access, yeah.
We've discussed that.
I mean, while most shows are like they'll shoot the end of the series, you know, season or whatever, during the season's current run. I mean, are they if they
they're not doing they're not doing a full season dump like Netflix? They're doing episode a week.
Are they going to record it all at once and then release it? Because if they do that, then there's no reason she shouldn't be able to also be on The Walking Dead.
It's a tough question because it depends on how far behind schedule they end up in production, because the show needs to start coming out in May. And since they are just going to be releasing it one episode per week, like a traditional television show, the way The Grand Tour is released on Amazon Prime, or the way that like the early Hulu original programs were released before they started giving us the whole seasons. Like when they did Battleground on Hulu, that was released one episode per week. That is what CBS is going to be doing, I think, as an attempt to get people to stay subscribed as long as possible.
right.
What they don't know is I'll just wait for the season to finish and then subscribe for 1 month and watch all of it. It's... So it's hard. It's also, frankly, The Walking Dead's the kind of show where anybody can die at any time. So
exactly,
like
I'd say, yeah, you think they're safe, and then they find another job on Voltron, and before you know it, who knows what's going to happen?
Frankly, she may already know that when she's going to die, and when she accepted the casting.
And that's why, you know, people are questioning that. It says, you know, we've seen a couple of characters on The Walking Dead accept shows elsewhere, and then shortly after that, they meet their demise
show. But that's why they accepted the show elsewhere.
Yep.
I don't know. It's a hard call.
But Star Trek Discovery is scheduled to be out May 2017. Whether or not that'll be on track, we'll see. But Sinequa Martin Green will be playing the lead role in that.
Yeah.
Speaking of spinoffs...
We're transitioning already? All right.
I don't know. I didn't have anything else.
Well,
I was
just going to say that I'm excited about her casting. I think it's important. I think it's really interesting about Star Trek Discovery that we have both the lead and the actress playing the captain are both women of color, and I think it's...
absolutely.
I think it's... This is
a major good step.
This is the first time a Star Trek series is going to have a woman of color as the lead, and it's going to be the first time they have a woman of color as the captain, and they're two different characters, which I think is remarkable unto itself. Mm-hmm. It looks... they also announced with this some of the Klingons getting cast and things like that, and it's... it looks like the Klingon... interactions with the Klingons are going to be a major part of Star Trek Discovery's plot. And so...
not bad actors either for most of the picks.
Yeah. So I'm excited about like Star Trek Discovery on so many levels. Like, I mean, the Sinequa Martin Green was the most important part of this announcement that we got in these last 2 weeks, but I think we're finally getting a lot of details about the show, and even though Brian Fuller is no longer going to be show running it, I'm really excited about the product that we're going to get. I think it's going to be pretty good.
I choose to be optimistic, yeah.
I don't think it's going to release on time, though. I mean, they've got 5 months to get a show out.
One episode. That television world, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, think about it. You know, it's when you watch most shows, they're still shooting the series while the episodes are airing. So
yes,
they're not going to shoot 13 episodes in the next, you know, Well, I mean, you think of production. So production schedule on a TV series is anywhere like 7 days for 7 days for an hour of television. At least it was on the previous Star Trek shows. And then there's post-production, but it's, which is, you know, and while, you know, back in the day that you saw a lot of rushed post-production, that's why the Enterprise always moves from left to right, or in Next Generation, it always moves from the bottom right-hand corner to the upper left-hand corner as they reuse the exact same model shots every episode. It's a little easier now with CGI that once they have the hero models. It's, I mean, you have to think, like, Stargate Atlantis, that shot on 7 days for an episode schedule. And then, you know, with any of these, it's just going to be making sure they have the runtime for the special effects. And that's, I think it's more than possible with episodic television to get 13 episodes done in time, especially if you just need to get the first few done before the air date to launch the season.
I choose to be optimistic.
Yeah, I think hitting May is going to be doable. Yeah. It's just me. But, you know, just because something can be done doesn't mean it should be done. Isn't that right, Nick?
Oh, boy. Yeah. So not long after Suicide Squad, the beloved...
The most suicide-y of squads.
The most suicide-y of squads. The beloved entry in the DC cinematic universe. The somehow set the villain bar even lower than the previous two films. Suicide Squad.
Everyone thought Suicide Squad was good because it was better than Batman versus Superman.
Which is, you know, again, it's like. That's like saying, you know, getting shot in the foot is better than cancer. I mean, yeah, it's not cancer, but there's still a bullet in your foot. Like, anyway, so not long after that came out, Margot Robbie, the charisma machine that she is, was saying that she got really invested in the Harley Quinn character and that she would love to do a spin-off movie centering on Harley Quinn with some of the other women of the DC universe as, like, supporting characters along the way, which in and of itself is not a bad idea.
And all actors say they want to work more because actors like having jobs.
Uh-huh, and that's the subtext you always have to remember. Well, apparently... this thing is getting greenlit. Margot Robbie will be leading the Gotham City Sirens, which will be directed once again by our buddy David Ayer, the director of Suicide Squad.
The most Ayer of all Davids.
Uh-huh. You know, the guy who turned out that script in about 6 weeks. And
you know.
And, you know, already had some kind of problematic depictions of women in a...
You know, there isn't another person I can think of, like, where, like I've had this situation more with David Ayer than anything. Hey, they're making this movie. Oh, that could be good. David Ayer is going to do it. Oh.
No, there's one person. There is one person, and that is Zack Snyder.
Yes.
I'm about to say, yeah, like, Zack Snyder... arguably Michael Bay, for that matter. But here's the thing.
Michael Bay can make 5 Transformers movie, and 1.5 of them are good.
I'm actually really concerned about Michael Bay, having seen the latest trailer for the new Transformer. Like, somebody go make sure he's okay. Like, that...
it was, oh my God. We do need to talk about this episode, though.
Let's talk about that.
So Gotham City Sirens is there's a comic.
It's
Gotham
a thing.
City. Yeah,
it's an actual comic. Yeah,
and Harley Quinn is in there,
along with Poison Ivy and Catwoman. Usually, maybe some other characters, depending on who's writing at the time and how anti-hero-y you want to write. Huntress, you know.
And it comes, here's the thing. It's like Margot Robbie is well cast as Harley Quinn. They just didn't give her a good script. Like, That's
the story of the DC Extended Universe movies, is here's some potentially good casting, Will Smith, Ben Affleck, etc., and here's a terrible script that they won't be able to get anything out of.
I mean, I have hope about some of the films that haven't come out yet, just because of the very different directors involved. Like Wonder Woman has a very different creative team. So that's why I'm
Zack
optimistic.
Snyder's still attached, which
right, but there's attached, and then there's in charge, which he's not. So I mean, there's but anyways, to go back to this though, like on one hand, like I was really excited for the idea of a Gotham City Sirens movie because like more women led action films would be great, because you know, frankly, it just would be nice to not be looking at a dude's crotch all movie. I'm just saying, but.
Not to mention, I'm in favor of any women-led action movies that aren't starring Emily Blunt or Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
Not because I dislike them, but because they're the only women allowed to do action movies anymore.
Right, they're both great actresses, but, like, oh my god, like, besides the occasional, you know, Jennifer Lawrence showing up, because Jennifer Lawrence gets cast in everything. Yeah, no. It's, anyways,
We haven't had a Michelle Rodriguez action movie in a long time, have we?
Well, The Furious is coming out.
Yeah,
and that's an ensemble, but she's in there.
Yeah, this is, it's such a, David Ayer is just, I feel,
David
is such
Ayer.
A bad director for this. And like, even on the bigger aspect of things,
I feel like David Ayer is just not good at things. Like when it comes to, like, Zack Snyder is bad, David Ayer is incompetent. Like, like that's my like Zack Snyder just has no idea about what, like, Zack Snyder has the opposite idea about what good is. Like, his idea of good is actively bad for, like, you know, ostensibly. David Ayer just doesn't really kind of, like, know what he's doing. That's the impression I get based on their work.
But this also just further demonstrates why the DCEU could really use its own Kevin Feige, or Feige, or however it's pronounced, because it seems like they're just scattershotting, like, what they're going to do next. Like, there is no, they say they have a plan, but then suddenly it's like, we gotta introduce the Justice League. And to introduce the Justice League, here's the Suicide Squad, I guess.
Jeff Johns isn't really doing a whole lot to encourage me.
Exactly. Like,
well, and they do have good creative people on the TV side, including a guy who I used to post on a Transformers message board with back in the day, which is weird. Is one of the people in charge of DC's television. life is weird. There's, like, for a while it felt like it was going to be Zack Snyder, which would have been a nightmare, and it seems like the studio, like, while they were smart enough to say, let's not make Zack Snyder in charge of everything, like, I feel like they kind of said they were going to do that with Jeff Johns, but we're not really seeing that, especially with this Gotham City Sirens
really
announcement.
It feels like they're just throwing every dart and trying to find out what sticks. Like, Superman. Well, I don't think it's that people don't like murder Superman. They just not like Superman. But they're throwing some... okay, bunch of villains no one's heard of.
For the folks at home who... where we lost a little bit of Nick's audio in there... It's just bad.
Is my audio just not coming in?
No, it's coming fine. You just glitched for a second. Like, you Cylon'd for a second. It's no big deal. It just happens.
It's actually a Cylon. That's our big reveal at the end of 2016 for Nerd and Ties, that Nick's been a Cylon the whole time.
At least you don't have to see my glowing red spinal column.
Well, that's because none of us are having sex with you. I hope not.
No offense to either of you, but...
Or we're at least not watching you have sex. I mean... That's the other option.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that either. Sorry. I'm really not in favor of either of those options.
Nobody, we all
Nothing
agree.
Personal.
Nobody is on board.
Well,
with
and
this.
You gotta ask, like, how does anyone who's a Cylon not know they're a Cylon? Like, do none of them have none of them ever masturbated, like, in the dark?
Oh Jesus!
Like,
okay.
This has gone from a terrible movie idea to a terrible idea. Period.
Like,
anyway,
well, also
to,
like just having
women,
sex, like who,
comic
like
book characters,
if they're having sex or doing anything comic. Sexual, and their back is gonna light up, man. Like, have they never done that, like in a dark room where suddenly, hey, why is it glowing red in here? Oh shit, that's coming from me. Do I have cancer? That's what would happen if it was at least me. Like.
So similar to that tangent, this is a really bad idea, you guys. Like
a lot of images we were just presented with that I don't want to think about.
Well, and
WebMD would tell me that glowing back during sex would mean cancer, because WebMD tells me everything is cancer.
Go can we rewind though?
Yes, go ahead. Because
we also have there's. How much is there any credibility to the rumor of Megan Fox as Poison Ivy? Is that a thing, or is that
no? Okay, so
like
what,
that was around for a bit, and
all
I
that happened
Ivy,
was is that
I have not found a good source.
All that happened was is that she told some reporter that she'd be interested in the role. That is literally all that happened, which again comes down to
can
the fact that actor says actor would like to
mind?
Work.
Can people stop losing their mind every time Megan Fox says she would like a part? Can we please do that?
Well,
that's becoming a thing.
I would like a part in a Marvel movie, but you're not going to see me getting a post about it on Cinema Blend. I mean
that's the whole thing. Is it like you get all these posts on these art? Like I try not to like publish this stuff on Nerd and Tie because it's always mm-hmm. like X actor said they'd be interested in reprising their role. Like, of course they would. They want to work. It's like. Hey,
I wanted to bring it up to dispel the that before it gets goes further, because
no, it's like it comes down to the fact that all actors want to work. Whenever you see an article that says like you know XYZ would be interested in reprising ABC and DYF, like it's
DYF fell apart after season 5 anyway.
I know. It's but like it. Every actor, unless there was some heinous working condition, wants to work more. Like, it's like saying, hey, do you want to be able to pay to eat? Yes, I would love to be able to pay to eat. That is how you need to read every single one of those articles. Like, Megan Fox says she'd be interested in playing Poison Ivy. Megan Fox is interested in being able to pay to eat. So is her husband,
yeah.
Brian Austin Green. If I went to Brian Austin Green and said, hey, Brian Austin Green, would you be interested in playing Superman ever? He'd say yes. And you know what would happen is I'd write an article. Could Brian Austin Green replace Henry Cavill as Superman? He wants to. Like, that's not a thing that's actually happening. That is a pile of bullshit because some reporter asked an actor, would you like to be able to pay for food?
I think what we're getting at is that this is a terrible idea, though.
To be fair, I think Megan Fox would be a perfectly... here's the thing. The only reason why I wouldn't want Megan Fox to be playing Poison Ivy is because I think Megan Fox does her best work is when she's going against type. When,
mm-hmm.
like...
No, I agree.
Because she's actually not a terrible actress, but when she gets cast as, like, the sexy girl, it's, like, they never give her anything. So since Poison Ivy... Now, Poison
no
Ivy...
dimension to that.
Poison
yeah.
Ivy is a multidimensional character, yes. However, because, you know, we're talking about in the case of, like, a two-hour ensemble film, no one's going to get a ton of depth, and that means they're probably going to play heavily on her sexuality, which... many interpretations of Poison Ivy have played with. And that's the only reason why I don't want... Like, I think the best role I've ever seen Megan Fox in is her recurring character on New Girl, because she's allowed... Like, yes, she's attractive, but she's allowed to, like, play, like, a character who's not just all about being attractive. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's allowed to be a dimensional... And her performance is great on that show. And so that's like, if I wanted to see Megan Fox in something, honestly, I'd want her to be doing something that wasn't, that wouldn't be so easily pigeonholed into that, because that's all that, happens is that bad writers and directors then just do that. And she's not given any room to work.
I completely agree.
And it's, yeah. It's, and so it's, I'd rather see someone else play Poison Ivy because of who is less likely to be pushed to that direction.
Yes.
So it becomes a component because, and you know, again, this is, the funny thing is it's not actually like a problem with Megan Fox. The problem is that I think that the writers and directors wouldn't let her get outside of that box. And while I believe that she's talented, I don't know if she's brave enough to push against the box when it's not obvious to do so. Because there are a lot of actors who will just fall into whatever box the director wants them to do. And I don't fault them. Again, they're there because they want to pay.
Sometimes that's just the easiest way to make money.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
It's a paycheck.
It's a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So, yes. And I think it's...
So that's... One way or another, though, Gotham City Sirens is a thing we're getting.
You know,
so.
And you know who's not gonna be able to make Poison Ivy a good character? David Ayer.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, David Ayer, out of all people, is not someone who I would like expect to like do anything interesting
turn
with his
out
characters.
This, he's not to gonna quote, turn out the Shawshank Redemption of comic books movies, guys. That's...
Right.
To right. quote the awesome guys at Honest Trailers, they did the impossible and made the Joker suck.
Yeah. Jared Leto was so poorly cast as the Joker. And not because I don't think that, like, if someone reined him in and, like, did something, but the fact is what happened was they did the opposite of how you deal with Jared Leto, and that was...
Which is don't give him any time at all.
They let him do whatever he wanted, and it. God, that he's so fundamentally misunderstands the Joker. That's the only thing that bothered me. Was not that he went all method. It's that like he like was like shipping people dead carcasses. Like that's not the Joker. Is like he's a murderer, but he's about being clever, man. Like
it's about blocking away. Blocking a path by lighting a fire truck on fire and making you go around.
Yeah, to
quote another person, a friend of a Furs of mine, Martin Billany, Jared Leto's Joker is every bit as bad and misplaced as Ben Affleck's Batman is perfect.
Yeah.
Like he's the antithesis of Batman in all the worst ways.
it's like he looked at the Heath Ledger Joker and saw just kind of the chaotic part of that performance and not the clever part of that performance. Like he saw the stabbing a guy in the eye with a pencil and didn't like appreciate the setup joke.
The magic trick.
Right. Which to the Joker was more important than stabbing the guy in the eye.
Well, yeah, you can't ruin a punch. I mean, that's just the punchline.
Right.
The punchline's no good without a setup.
Right. And so, and while that's not my favorite version of the Joker, like, I mean, I'm a Silver Age Cesar Romero fan myself. But...
I got the live action Joker I wanted in the Flash mid-season finale. Thank you very much.
Oh God, yeah, but like, that was that
it was called
brilliant.
The Trickster, but it was still exactly the live action Joker I wanted.
Yeah, but like, and no, I love the Batman the Animated Series Joker also. But the Heath Ledger Joker I see is a legitimate interpretation of the text, where the Jared Leto Joker is just he took all the. He took the wrong parts of... He took the interpretation out of Heath Ledger's and not the core... Like, he took the parts that were against type without remembering that the only reason those worked on that interpretation was because he kept the core part and he threw out the core and just kept the accoutrements. Anyways, so, you know, we've been talking about bad movies in expanded universes. So I think at this point we should talk about the good kinds of expanded universes, and that was Rogue One.
So frustrated I couldn't see it yet.
So Nick hasn't seen it yet, and we're not going to spoil anything. That is,
no,
so
this
is
all
going to
be about the process of the film, so not about any plot points.
So this is spoiler free. I will say the timing of the film is the only close to a spoiler thing I'll say is that the end of Rogue One is like within an hour of the beginning of Star Wars: A New Hope.
Yeah, it's right up to it.
So
that'd
like,
kinda cool.
I mean, like it's literally like.
I was
not unlike what the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked how it pretty much jumped from like to put it in that time frame. I'm like, oh, this is not wasting any time here. There is no space to fill in between these two.
Yeah, no, it's so obviously Rogue One came out today, and I'm attempting to switch camera angles, and our cameras froze. So the audio version
is
getting stuff right, and
I'm a blurry face.
And hopefully our audio is still webcasting to the video. There we go. Anyways, so Rogue One came out this weekend, and it's been doing very well. It's no opening crawl because it's not an episode. It is a very different movie than any Star Wars movie we've ever gotten. I will say that the first thing I want to talk about is the tone of the film, which
yes.
is even darker than I thought it was going to be. This is a dark movie.
It needed to be, though. It needed to be understood that the Empire is getting to the point where they're going to use state-sponsored terrorism to keep people in check.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that at the beginning of episode of A New Hope, and so this is not a spoiler because this is in A New Hope, that in the beginning of A New Hope, they blow up the Senate.
Right.
They have literally, like, the Empire has blown up half of their own government. So it's like this is the atmosphere, and it's interesting because the previous, like, all the main cycle Star Wars films are very, like, space adventure, like people are dying, like they blew up Alderaan at the beginning of A New Hope, and literally billions of people just die at the beginning of that movie. But
they're still faceless.
But they're still faceless. So
you're like, oh, this is bad. This isn't.
It's still Flash Gordon-y.
Yeah, it's the difference is with this movie is that the violence is street level, like you.
In your face.
You're watching
a soldier die as they're fighting to get the plans.
Yeah.
You aren't just seeing spaceships getting thrown at the Death Star and seeing a flash of somebody that seeing a flash of somebody's face as the ship blows up around them. Like, these are characters you are getting to, like, I mean, you know,
yeah,
there's
let's not go that detail, like, but I will say it's a very dark war movie, and in the tradition of very dark war movies, and you will feel gutted, you will, like, you know, feel excited at times, but it's tonally,
I really want to see this movie,
it
guys.
Is tonally so different, you know, when they first announced it, I thought it was going to be like a heist movie. And not like
that's exactly what I thought it was going to be too.
Which,
I think everybody thought it was because they're stealing the Death Star plans,
right?
And you're like, oh. And I think maybe that's like, I'll be honest. I liked Rogue One better than I liked The Force Awakens, and maybe it's just because I know, like, we live in a universe where people are like, oh, you can't spoil the movie. Like, don't spoil things for me. Like, and people are so like caught up with not knowing like the end of something that
I don't
want
to know
away.
The movie. To, yeah.
Well, let me talk, man. All right. So like, it gets to the point where going into this movie, like, you know that the Death Star plans get stolen. Like this is an end thing that's going to happen. You know what's going to happen, but it's the matter of getting there. And I think that's what made this movie more exciting for me, is that there was never a point where I'm like, will they or won't they? Like, I know they're going to, but like, But at the same time, I'm sitting there and I'm like, these are people that you now have a face to, knowing the end goal, and it makes it that much more personal and dark and good. Like, I feel like if somebody came and told me the end goal of episode 9 of Star Wars, whatever the subtitle is going to be, like, I wouldn't be pissed off. After, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm excited to see how they get to that point now.
See, I'm completely, like, I don't understand, like, I don't think that, like, knowing that, you know, like, obviously we all know that the Death Star plans are going to end up, you know, where in Leia's hands at the beginning of A New Hope. Like, you know, we know she has that disc in her hand and she puts it into R2 at the beginning of A New Hope. But I don't think that has to do with, you know, people don't want to know spoilers because people don't want to know how things end, man. Like, if you don't understand why people don't want to, like, there's lots of stuff I'm not talking about right now because I know Nick hasn't seen the movie that, like, is, yeah, we know that, you know, X thing's going to happen at the end, but there's, like, 90,000 other variables that you don't know how they're going to turn out. And so, like, I don't know. It's, and I will tell you, I don't want to know the end of episode 9 long before I get there. What the heck? And, it's, like, I don't think it's unreasonable for people to ask for not to see spoilers posted.
Well,
it's, I think we live in
such a world where you're, like, where it's so important, like, that, like...
No, we live in a world where it's so hard not to get stuff spoiled because everybody talks about stuff and everything is so publicly accessible. And you know what? Like, if you in, like, 20... You know, if you, like, 20 years ago spoiled the end of a movie, you'd get punched in the balls by someone. Instead, they can't get to you because they're, you know, halfway across the world. You know, let me tell you, it's, you know, do you know how angry people got, like, if they had the ending of The Sixth Sense spoiled to them, you know, 15 years ago? They got very angry. Or Unbreakable. It's like, it's, that is the not posting spoilers or not, like, that is, like, the key, like, man, nobody wants to know the end until they watch it because that ruins the experience for, like, most of us. And yeah, there are always going to be the people who will flip to the end of the mystery book and read the last 3 pages, but that's not most people. And
yeah, it's storytelling is a process, and I appreciating how a story gets to a point, that's always a goal. Like, you don't, if you know where it's headed, unless the director explicitly wants you to know, or the storyteller explicitly wants you to know where it's headed, that's part of the story, is finding out naturally.
And, like,
an unreasonable request.
I don't understand why you think that is new or unreasonable for, it's because, like, look, I don't, like, fine, you don't care if you get the ending spoiled for you. That's fine. That's cool. But that's not what most people are like. And so, I don't, Fur is talking based on the video.
I can't hear anything.
I hear nothing.
Did you just cut off my sound, dude?
No, I don't have the ability.
A single thing.
Okay, now we hear you, but we're getting you through the wrong microphone. I can't, dude, you and Nick come on the same audio channel. I did not cut you off.
Okay,
what
I was saying was that for me, I was able to enjoy Rogue One better because I, like, knowing what's going to happen at the end, knowing that, hey, the Death Star plans end up with the Rebel Alliance, I was able to invest more on what was happening at that exact point in time. The end goal was not what was important at that point. What was important was learning about these people and about their backstories and whatnot.
But everyone knows that too. It's just like we saying that the Titanic sinks at the end of Titanic is not a spoiler about Titanic because that's not what the movie's about. It's, you know,
this movie was all about them getting the Death Star plans.
No, but it's that's not the point. The point
you know right away at the beginning of Titanic that Jack is dead because Rose says that. I don't understand your metaphor here.
Well, I've never seen Titanic, so that's the only reason why that metaphor fell apart is because I've just literally never actually watched the movie.
Well, yeah, but like for me, a spoiler would be I don't know who these characters are. I want to be invested in these characters. If I'm not getting the organic experience of that, then that is ruining the movie for me.
Okay, so let's you know we are getting really into this, and let's not this is all a philosophical argument that I think that no one's going to win. So why don't we just, you know, it's I'm actually going to come back to something like I liked Rogue One, but I liked The Force Awakens way more, but it's because these are very different movies for me seeing them. It's, I was talking about this with my wife beforehand about how I was excited to see Rogue One. It's, I was excited, like my excitement to see The Force Awakens was, I likened that to like a childlike excitement to see like a new Star Wars episode, where my excitement to see Rogue One was more, maybe a little more intellectual, the way I get excited about a movie as an adult, where, because for me, like the Force Awakens, like, yeah, it was going to be an exciting story, but it's, I knew, first off, I knew it was going to be a darker film, and you know, it, like, I knew what the end result of the film was going to be and how it played into the grander overarching story, while with The Force Awakens, there is a grand play being played out within this fictional universe that, like, for me was a little bit more, like that unknown. And also, frankly, you know, it just raised my favorite character in all of Star Wars canon at this point. So, not to say anything bad about Felicity Jones's Jyn Erso. I think she was phenomenal. And I really liked every actor in this movie. Even the characters whose names I can't remember, because the problem with an ensemble film crammed within 2 hours is that while they were very good about, so to get into like the critical, like they were very good about making you uniquely know who every character was in this film, and I'm not going to complain about that. It does have the problem that like beyond like Jyn Erso and Saw Gerrera, I only remember his name because he was introduced in the Clone Wars cartoon. For the most part, I don't remember, like, I remember Jyn Erso's name because they say it a lot, and that's,
I don't even remember who the guy is that she was with through
most
of the
movie. No,
I'll
it's
be
like,
honest,
he's like pretty much a co-lead, and he's a very developed character, but I cannot tell you what his name was. Like, I'm sure I could look it up.
Casso? It was something with a C.
Cassian,
yes.
Yeah. Like I will say okay, to talk about the CGI characters, because there are a couple.
Yes.
Because like I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Grand Moff Tarkin is in this movie, because you can't
in the trailer.
He's frankly you couldn't make this movie without his character being there, because he was, you know, of his importance to the Death Star. And I'll say that I wish we would have seen less of him.
That's exactly what, like, walking out of theater, because without spoiling anything else, you see another CG character in the movie as well, but you only see them for about...
There's a third one that you don't notice. One of the X-Wing pilots is a character from A New Hope, and he's CGI as well.
See, maybe it's because you don't see those other two for more than 5 seconds. Like,
right.
The other two are there. Like, it's turn around, boom, they're passing by.
Right. Because
you're seeing Moff Tarkin, he's having conversations. And at that point, my brain
and
is
he's
like
in a crowd.
It's like Candy Valley's kicking in right now.
It's like Jeff Dan. Like, so, like, in Tron Legacy, the young Jeff Dan.
Jeff Bridges.
Is
it Jeff Bridges or Bo Bridges?
I almost called him Jeff Daniels, and I'm so sorry to both Jeff Bridges and Jeff Daniels. But, like, at least in Tron Legacy, they kind of sparingly used him in the flashbacks, and then in the video game world, you can make the excuse of that it's a digital world for those scenes, and, like, I got my brain out of it. But with this, like, Grand Moff Tarkin, like, I don't know, like, and maybe it's even just because the lighting is more severe in this movie on him than it was on the real actor in episode 4. I don't know. It's so,
you know, honestly, I think Tron Legacy was done really well. Like,
I said,
it's the mouth.
The issue is that you just have to see you see him for more than 5 seconds, and at that point your brain is just like, he's it's not really him.
Yeah, it's really subtle stuff in the mouth, like, and it's like, in 20 years I'm sure they'll get the CGI down right for this stuff, but we are not quite there on like believability on human characters.
Well, they went out and got a dead ringer for
Mon Mothma. Yeah,
Mon Mothma. Like, they couldn't have.
Well, they
like,
cast
done some
her
makeup
back,
work for Moff Tarkin.
She was cast back during Episode 3, and even though her scenes got cut, if you just have a dead ringer for Mon Mothma, bring up. But also, frankly, Mon Mothma was such a minor character in Return of the Jedi that. You don't have to have her dead on. I think that with Grand Moff Tarkin, I don't think there's a way you could do that with a lookalike, because he's just so like distinct and so prominently featured in A New Hope.
Plus, he's Peter goddamn Cushing.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
I'm sorry. One of the greatest genre movie actors of all time.
He is Doctor Who. Not the Doctor, but Doctor Who.
I also want to say that I'm glad that another character showed up, and it was the character that, as we all have known the character through most of the Star Wars series. So I know that's
yeah,
very
I love
vague
the
whatnot,
I love
without...
the C-3PO appearance.
Yes,
well, they're actually like you... there are quite a few like random like. This is not a spoiler to say that randomly the, you know, remember the, in A New Hope, I forget their names, like the two guys at the bar that like, Obi-Wan cuts one of their arms off.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the death sentence and five systems.
I don't like you either. Like those two guys, they are randomly in a scene, like walking through the scene. And so like
they even drop the, we don't want any trouble line like that.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, we get it. I don't know, so I guess they're immediately leaving for Tatooine? Like, we're not on Tatooine.
I just like to think that those guys just walk up to everybody. Like, that was his intro. That's his introduction, is, I've got the death sentence on five systems.
My friend doesn't like you either.
He's got a butt chin.
He really does.
Look into his butt chin.
Rogue One, go see it. I mean, like I said, I liked it a little. I liked it more than Force Awakens.
The one thing I will say
I
about
felt
this movie,
more attached to the characters.
I guess I felt more attached in many ways to the Force Awakens characters. But I guess the only thing I'm going to say about this movie is that I loved it and it's good. So I mean, like, none of us are disagreeing that the movie's good. You know, it's just a matter of where we hold it within our personal list of Star Wars films. But I will say, this is the first Star Wars movie that I might not be comfortable bringing a kid to.
And that's how I felt walking out of it. I'm like, I don't think I can take Ophelia to see this. Like,
Yeah, no, you can probably bring her to a mainline Star Wars movie, but I would wait till she's over to show her Rogue One.
Like, some of the beach scenes, I mean, it obviously wasn't as graphic and whatnot, but it was very reminiscent of a lot of World War II movies.
Yeah, no, that's exactly.
Storming the beaches and guys getting, like, just absolutely gunned down by blaster rifles. I mean,
the rumors about this movie is that the reason there were reshoots is because it was too dark. And
well, I remember at one point there was actually rumors that, like, you were going to get to see... because it's not a spoiler, Darth Vader's in the movie, he's in the trailer, and all that. Like, there were rumors at one point that he was going to be involved in the battle, and that you were going to get to see him, like, pick people up and use them as human shields, like, walking forward. Like, is what some of the original shot rumors were.
Yeah, and that's
I'm kind of glad they toned back the Darth Vader, if that's what they did, because
I will say every Darth Vader scene in this movie is great.
Is amazing.
It's great.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
It's terrifying. It makes him terrifying again.
Yeah.
Well, and I just want to throw this out there. I haven't seen it yet, so again, I don't have an opinion. But what I will say is that I think it was laughable. I still think it was absolutely laughable that there were people who, when there was as soon as you started hearing talk of reshoots, more than half a year before the movie came out, we're like, oh my God, it's doomed. This is it. It's going to be a total crap fest. I can't believe they're doing reshoots. And here I am in the corner like, Suicide Squad did reshoots a month before it came out, and you're freaking out about this?
Yeah, it's... Technically, the last shots of Return of the King were taken after it won an Oscar. Because for the extended edition, the last shot of Return of the King was shot the night after it won an Oscar.
Of course it did. It was. Why would I be surprised by this?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Rogue One, very good, but it is a dark war movie, and so if you're going in expecting the light fantasy of the rest of the series, like, this makes Empire Strikes Back look fun and hopeful.
Oh, dear God. I'm excited now.
It's very good. It's very good, and you should see it if you have.
I'm going to. I was saying
to the listener and viewer of this, like, of course I want you to see it, Nick, God damn it, but I want them in them's worlds to see, do, and hear. You know, Nick, there's a lot of movies to get excited about, but they're not all Star Wars, although some of them, apparently they're all made by Disney.
Disney owns us at this point.
Late
or Sony
one night,
in this case with Disney's property.
Late one night, I was about to go to bed. I was literally lying in bed, and I was getting ready to go to sleep, and someone said the Spider-Man trailer's up, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm about to lay down. I could deal with one more. I could deal with something good today. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be bad. Whatever. And then I was so happy. So Spider-Man Homecoming's trailer is out. And it's everything I would possibly want from a Spider-Man movie led by the Tom Holland Spider-Man. The effect shots look great. The scenes of him interacting with totally not Genki Lee, but let's face it, they just put Genki Lee in a Peter Parker story, were great. The add-ons to the costume, including the classic 60s web wings, made me so happy.
Yeah.
And then Batman is Birdman. Birdman came in as Birdman to menace Spider-Man. Michael Keaton as the Vulture is the most awesome casting choice I ever could have thought of. And Stan Lee is probably dancing on Bob Kane's grave saying, look at my Spider-Man movie now, Bob! Look where your Batman is!
to be fair, Batman's in decent hands with Ben Affleck.
I know. I just... Back in 89... See, Stan Lee and Bob Kane were friends. And back in 89... At least Stan Lee claims, and I mean, it's a Stan Lee claim, so this could mean anything. But back then, he claimed that Bob Kane would regularly give him crap about, hey, look, Batman's got the biggest movie in America. Where's Spider-Man, Stan? Where's his big movie? Stan Lee finally gets his beautiful revenge on... No, but Michael Keaton's such a good actor, and... I'm not a big fan of the Vulture, but the idea of Michael Keaton playing the Vulture makes me care about the character. it just looks so fun. And then, like, it was a little just cherry on top of this Sunday, we get a couple shots of Iron Man in there. Just
yeah, you know,
most awkward hug in film history.
I will say I liked the I did like the Tony Stark, scene with Tom Holland, but I will say that I don't really need a lot of Iron Man in this movie.
I don't need a lot of him. Acknowledging their relationship is all I want.
Yeah.
I don't want Iron Man to be a main player at all.
But even with that opening shot with, like, the joke about you guys aren't the real Avengers, Hulk gives it away, like, is just...
It's very Peter Parker.
It's great.
It's Peter.
You know, I will say that this is probably, like, I don't want to watch more high school age Spider-Man. I will always say that. I will always mean it. But if I have to watch high school age Spider-Man. I think Tom Holland's giving probably the best performance that we've seen out of anything. Now, Tobey Maguire, I like Tobey Maguire.
They actually look like high schoolers, you mean?
Yeah. Tobey Maguire, I think, was great. And Spider-Man 2 is a wonderful movie.
I agree 100%.
And Spider-Man 1 was good for when it came out.
It's just distracting that him and all the other high school kids look older than their teachers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, that's true.
And on the bright side, as far as we can tell, we're not going to have to watch Uncle Ben die.
Fingers crossed. Sorry, we still had to see the pearls hit the ground in Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, so we'll probably get a flashback or something about, oh, my Uncle Ben would have been great to be here for this. And then we're probably going to get a flashback, aren't we?
I mean, I think it helps that we're skipping like so much of the origin. Like, we're not going to get, you know, Peter Parker the Wrestler. We're not going to get, you know, all the stuff that was so key to, like, you know, the guy getting away with the money and the
I
thing.
And I don't know that we need that, though.
We don't. And we don't, because you know honestly, what? Because we don't really need to reboot Spider-Man for a third time, but it's happening anyways. So,
But frankly, I mean, whether it counts or not, the Sam Raimi wrestler scene is so iconic, I would want to sidestep trying to redo that anyway, because Bonesaw McGraw is a phenomenal character. I don't care what anyone says. It's a great scene. It is a great movie for its time.
Oh yeah,
and there's no need to replace it.
Exactly. And I think that, like, you know, and they tried to do the origin differently with Amazing, and mix it up a little bit. But frankly,
a movie that I still liked, but yeah.
I still like that movie. But I'm happy even if we get stuck with a flashback. The fact is that most of this movie, Spider-Man is going to be an operating superhero by default already. It's not an origin story. It is, even if they do a flashback to establish a little bit, like, it's not going to be like every other time, like the two times before I watched a Spider-Man movie and had to wait for the first third of the movie for Uncle Ben to die. And, you know, like, it'll just have already happened. And I'm so happy about that. You know what? And the best part is that we got the Marvel Cinematic Universe roughly aging with real time. It means in a couple of years, I won't have to watch high school age Peter Parker anymore. And I'll get adult Peter Parker, which is what I grew up with. You know, I sound like I know
maybe
that
I'll get my hairy goblin that I deserve.
I know that the I've difference between me and Joe Quesada in many ways is that I grew up with a married adult Spider-Man and loved that version. And he grew up with an unmarried Spider-Man, and he loved that version, so that's what he wanted it to reset to. But the fact is,
I grew up with a married Spider-Man who suddenly became unmarried because of the devil.
But that's, like, I understand that maybe I'm no better than Joe Quesada for wanting my childhood version of Spider-Man back, but on the other hand, I think my version's better, so... I know that's very mature. And so it's not on the schedule, but I think we should talk about the trailer for The Last Knight. The Transformers 5.
Transformers.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I want to contrast that to this trailer. So Spider-Man Homecoming trailer made me actually, like, really excited about a movie that I didn't really care about. Like, because, again, like, I've made it very clear, I'm not really excited about this version of the character, but I'm actually genuinely, like, really kind of hyped about Homecoming now. After this trailer,
the moment I saw Tom Holland in Civil War, I started caring. I didn't care before, and then he was in Civil War, and I was like, "Oh, I love Spider-Man again."
Right. But the Last Knight trailer, I think, is literally like every Michael Bay movie had a trailer, and they made this. Like, it is every beat, like, from every trailer ever that for any Michael Bay movie. Like, it is the most generic sci-fi action film trailer I have ever seen in my life. Like,
you know what my big takeaway was from that trailer? Holy crap, Anthony Hopkins is behind on his rent. That was my big takeaway from that entire trailer.
Yeah, no, it's like,
well, it's like, like I said earlier, I almost want to, like, go make sure Michael Bay is doing okay. Like, I want to make sure he's doing all right. Something seems wrong, Michael Bay.
Yeah, he realized he made the movie Pain and Gain and finally regrets it, maybe. I don't know.
I'd like him to regret his Benghazi movie first, personally, but that's me.
I don't know. I was watching, I watched a lot of trailers. Like, I watched, you know, the Last Night trailer is just so cliche. Just like how you knew the instant Tom Cruise was cast in The Mummy that the trailer was going to involve a plane crash, like a plane action scene.
He was running at one point, too.
He was, of course, running.
Okay. Yeah. I had to remember because I saw the trailer and I'm like, he ran. I'm trying to remember how many times he ran. Because he ran a lot of times.
He only runs a few times. But the Tom Cruise run is always fun because you got to do the blade arms.
He ran so far away, though.
Everybody, Tom Cruise run. All right. That's
you can't catch me.
Hopefully the video has been watchable enough where that joke came through for the video viewers. Because now that we're doing video again this episode, after taking off so long. All right. I'm really anti-excited for The Last Knight. Like,
I didn't see Transformers 4. I still haven't seen it. I'm going to say for The Last Knight the same thing I said for Age of Extinction. Guys, if you hate the Transformers movies, if you hate what Michael Bay is doing with them, don't see them. It's that simple. See the movie. If you like the Transformers and you want them to keep doing good things, go to your comic book store right now, pick up Optimus Prime number 1 and Lost Light number 1. There are good Transformers stories you could be reading right now.
The only reason why I saw any of... that's the movie I left in the middle of, was because it was the second half of a double feature with the second Planet of the Apes movie. I always forget which comes first, Rise or Dawn, out of the two titles, but it was the second
one. I think it's Rise is the second one, because we're getting War 4.
Well, I think it might actually be Dawn is the second one.
Yeah, no, it is Dawn. Rise was first, Dawn was second,
first.
Now it's War.
Yeah, it's,
still need to see that. Yeah.
It,
good.
I didn't watch the first one. I watched the second one. The second one's really good.
Okay.
So, they're good. You know, but... You know, we've talked about Star Trek this episode, we've talked about Star Wars this episode, and of course right now we're talking about trailers, but I think there's another space opera we need to bring up.
Yes, okay, so back in 2015, or was it 14?
14.
14. Back in 2014, our favorite movie was Guardians of the Galaxy, everybody's favorite group of a-holes trapezing around space, reluctantly saving the universe. We were all excited for a sequel. And boy, a couple weeks ago, we got the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It has everything. It has Drax. It has Raccoon. It has Star-Lord. But most importantly, guys, it has Baby Groot.
Who's hilarious.
Yeah. Who's great. Like, who could have thought that just hearing I am Groot and, like, a baby, like,
still Vin Diesel. Still Vin Diesel.
Still Vin Diesel doing it would be hilarious. And it is, like, the whole conversation in the trailer with Rocket explaining not to touch the button is one of the funniest moments I've ever seen in a trailer.
I mean,
it's so good.
You have to remember that at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 1, the scene with Baby Groot dancing was mo-capped off of Vin Diesel. So much that when his
happy every
his,
time I
when his
that.
He made everybody leave the room while he did it because he didn't want to dance in front of people, but it is mo-capped off of Vin Diesel actually dancing, and apparently his friends all recognized it as you mo-capped that dancing, didn't you? That is exactly how you dance. So whenever you're watching Baby Groot, just remember your favorite, like, that is what, inside Vin Diesel, that's who he really is.
Another thing I like from the trailer is that we're going to be seeing a lot more of Drax's outer coming out of his shell personality, which I think like, as much as I love the character in the first, he was kept things very close to the chest. You can tell now that he considers every member of the every one of these people his friends, and like he's okay with opening up to them.
Well, they're letting Batista actually like expand into the role. You know, it was really good
in the first one. I'm excited he's going to get more screen time because he was phenomenal in that first one.
Do you want a hug?
No.
Come, I'm going to give you a hug.
No.
She just revealed your deepest, darkest secret.
You must be so embarrassed.
Now do me.
Yeah, no, he's hilarious. And I think really what we're going to get, it's the whole point of this movie, from what James Gunn has said, is exploring the dynamics between the characters. And so I think we're going to get a lot more character development on pretty much everybody now that they're like, you know, it's the movie's about finding out who Star-Lord's father is. And it's not about like where the first movie was literally saving, you know, the universe from an Infinity Stone. You know, this one is going to be about figuring out who these characters are. And that's why originally, actually, James Gunn had intended to set the movie at a point where Groot would actually be fully grown. But he decided he wanted to do more of, like, how these characters, like, establish their, you know, interactions and how they, like, how they come together fully as a crew and a team. And so that's why he had to set it, like, really closely to the end of the first movie, which is why Groot is still Baby Groot.
I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be fun.
And he admits that it looks like it would be a great marketing opportunity, and he clearly recognized that, but that's not why they did it. Because Lord knows, next Christmas, I'm at least be buying probably my wife a stuffed Baby Groot.
Yeah,
my wife is scared of Baby Groot. She thinks he's terrifying. That he's just at that uncanny valley level, so.
Okay. That is unfortunate for her, but the rest of us can still enjoy him.
But yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 coming out in May of 2017. It's July this year. Or July, right?
No, July is Spider-Man. May is
July
Guardians.
Is Spider-Man. May is... It is so hard to keep track of what superhero movie is coming out when at this point.
Well, so, yeah. It's, well, you know, Marvel's going to be doing 3 a year from now on. Well, technically, Spider-Man is Sony Pictures, so it's like Marvel Studios is only really making 2 of those movies, and then Sony's making Spider-Man. But, yeah.
Still, that's a lot.
Well, they've been doing 2 a year out of Marvel for a while now, so I think it's just that it felt like it was less when there was less competition. You know what I mean? Like when we didn't have the DCEU movies coming out also, and you know, it really didn't feel as dense when it was, you know, like during the Avengers or something. You know what I mean? But anyway,
it still doesn't feel that dense to me because I don't see the DCEU movies in theaters.
I do. But I also, you know what it is though, is like during the summer, I go to every movie pretty much. You know, it's because I go to the, like if my wife and I are bored on a Saturday night, we go to the drive-in because it's fun to sit outside and watch a movie. And so I end up seeing everything. That's the one problem with Star Wars coming out in the winter is I have to go to a theater. I admittedly also went to a theater to see Doctor Strange. What's the reason why I haven't seen Fantastic Beasts yet? Is I'm probably just going to rent that or, you know, watch it on Netflix or something when it, you know, after a while. I pay for enough streaming services that it'll come to one of them eventually. But it's like, yeah, I had to make a call that, like, I have to see enough movies that, like, between Doctor Strange and Star Wars, I was not going to, like, have time this, like, fall, like, this holiday season to squeeze in a third movie and still live my life. But anyways, we should move on because
we got a couple more things to get through.
Well,
here.
We've got one more story and then we've got mailbag. So one of the last big story we have here is that in convention news, Anime Apocalypse, which is a show that had been running for a few years in Northern Illinois, traditionally the Rockford area, but I think it was in Schaumburg last year.
Schaumburg, it's last year, yeah.
Yeah, has officially closed its doors. Anime Apocalypse is no more. This shouldn't really be a huge surprise to people because the convention was normally scheduled for this time of year. Last year it was held in January. Previous years it had been held in December, but they had made no announcements about a 2017 con, and we would literally be just like a month away from the normal time of year if they continued with those dates. And with no announcements, it's pretty unsurprising that the convention closed its doors. But yeah, it is the end of Anime Apocalypse. Which they held their first con in December 2012 and had a certain Nick Izumi as a guest, I believe.
Yeah, this is really melancholic for me because that was my first and only con that I was solo a guest at. Like that was where I was able to I built up a bit of more of my fan base there. I met some really cool people. I got to get lunch with some industry guests. It was a really fun time, and I really enjoyed being able to provide content for them and meeting the people who are at Anime Apocalypse. And sadly, for me, this is really, it's really sad. I really enjoyed them.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think, you know, we talked about this last episode with the convention bubble stuff. But I think it really does show a saturation to, you know, there are certain areas that are frankly being overserved in the convention market. And, you know, with their move last year, I know that they had a massive drop in attendance when they moved from Rockford to Schaumburg. And so being financially unsustainable isn't really a huge surprise at this point.
And it, I don't know, I don't know what they could have done. Like, at the end of the day, like, some people argued, a lot of people in Rockford felt really frustrated, almost betrayed when they moved out of Rockford. But the fact of the matter is, I've heard people in Rockford claim, oh, there were other venues they could have used, but
that doesn't mean there were affordable ones.
It's like, one, it doesn't mean they were affordable. Two, Rockford brought with it a lot of other challenges. For example, Apocalypse, it's years later, they had to, in the middle of the rave, they had to stop at a certain hour, have everyone come out, and then ID them because of the curfew in town. Like, that was part of their policy. They had to stop their rave, ID everyone, and then restart it. That was just part of holding an event in Rockford.
Yeah.
And then in the last year, Rockford has been named like the murder capital of the US, so
wait, when was that named? By who? I wanna know the statistics because I'm betting lots of places like, say, Washington, D.C. and New York City and Chicago might have something to say about that.
I'm sorry, I've used a bit of hyperbole, but Rockford is more and more being known, especially in this area, it's being really well known for just the levels of violence around there. It's a very, I don't know, it's a nasty, I keep forgetting you guys don't get the same local newspapers I get.
No.
I'm sorry.
Nope.
Local newspaper.
I don't even know what a newspaper is, to be honest. Is that like, do you like, oh, that's what you wrap fish in.
That's that thing that like old people read instead of the internet.
I know.
They're the ones who run those websites that only let me view a couple of articles before they ask me for money. The Leader Telegram does that. Like, at least it did when I lived in Eau Claire.
We get about free 8 articles a month.
And
I think.
The Journal Courier does that here in Lafayette, and that's why I go to the local news station for my local news online instead of the local paper. That's why I go to WLFI.com to find out find out my local events here in Lafayette, Indiana.
I'm gonna bookmark that site right now.
I'll put it this way: Rockford is at neighborhoodscout.com. Rockford is rated as a 4% safe on a scale of 100. With annual reported crimes, 2,349 violent and yeah.
It's because of the rock and roll band Cheap Trick being from there. Those are some violent fans.
So can you tell me what, like, so are you able to look up like any area for that?
Yeah, I think so.
What's 68th and North, 68th Street and North Avenue in Milwaukee?
This is gonna make the show run really long, you guys. I mean, I'm sorry.
Okay,
I'm
sorry.
While we figure that out, let's go to mailbag.
So goodbye, Langland. Anime Apocalypse.
Yeah, see you later, guys. All right, Langland writes to us as the sponsor of our show.
Sponsored by Langland.
A word from our sponsor.
The land where you can lang all you want.
Hey, guys. Okay, so this letter is going to have a few things to talk about. For the most part, I want to talk about my opinion on the convention saturation deal that you talked about last episode. I will also share my favorable opinions on Rogue One, and I also want to share something I just learned about that I think is kind of cool, and it might be kind of geeky, but it also involves something in my childhood. First off, I agree that con market is getting oversaturated in the sense of these huge ones, but I still feel the smaller, more niche kind of cons, like No Brand Con, for example, will stick around. You say the official word is a change in social climate, which, yes, you said the codename is for the Russian hacked election. Anyways, I want to say that social climate never changed because I have noticed for the 12 years I have been going to conventions, the progressive climate in conventions has always been there, even when George W. Bush was president. Mostly there. This is an author, an editor, a reader's note. Mostly there, but there are still some groups out there that do everything they can to not be socially progressive. But overall, I can see the big stuff that are trying to be like Comic-Con in San Diego will probably stop. I don't think that'll be a thing. But I think the conventions will still be around in the form of the smaller cons, and there will always be plenty of those. I think that's just kind of the opposite. This is me talking again. I think you're going to see the smaller cons die out before you're going to see the big industry-run conventions die out.
So I've got my opinion on this is actually more mixed. I think that some of the small cons will die out. It depends on the market. I think the small regional cons have a better shot at surviving than the small city cons because they're not... It all has to do with region timing and competition. There's going to be a collapse eventually, and whether or not it's happening right now, I think it's started, but whether or not it has, you know, is unknown. And there will be conventions after this collapses. Like, I think a small convention in the Chicago area is not going to survive, but a small convention in Madison, Wisconsin could live. You know what I mean? It all depends on how overserved the town is and the surrounding area.
So, all right, now on to Star Wars. Play the Star Wars theme or hum it or something. Don't worry, you're too small time to be hit with copyright laws.
I'm not risking it.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother. I really enjoyed this movie. It was a little bit different from what I thought it would have been, but overall it was very good. I kind of wish there could have been a lightsaber duel somewhere, but I understand that it takes place after the Jedi have been eradicated. Well, it's not a... editor's note. That's something also that I really liked about the movie is that it didn't feel like the person that you're following has been specially chosen by the universe to bring back blah, 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 that kind of thing.
There was
like,
no chosen ordinary, one in this film, yeah.
Yeah, it's an ordinary person with greatness that's been thrust upon them, and they have to step up and make a difference. And I think that's what was really cool about the movie, too. Still, overall, I loved the movie, and I also really liked watching Felicity Jones. She was quite attractive.
God damn it.
I'm also annoyed at the lack of scrolling text at the beginning, too, but I'm sure you guys will probably give me Sierra Hotel and Dio Tango about that. If it doesn't laugh at that, then I will be Papa Oscar. No, Oscar Kilo, Langland. Overall, I liked Rogue One, and I hope there will be a Rogue Two. I hope there's not a Rogue Two. This is me, again, because that story's been told.
It would also make no sense.
Yeah, the sequel to Rogue One is Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope.
Yeah, it's the opening crawl, I thought, was actually the lack of an opening crawl is important because it needed to separate this from the saga films. It's this was like the episodes are all about this grand saga about, you know, force users and the balance of the force and all of that. And that's what makes those episodes. This was a movie that takes place in that universe, but it's a very different kind of story. And so, like, I was actually surprised they put A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away at the beginning.
I was too.
I was a little surprised they even did that because the reason why I think it's great that they don't have a text scroll is because that would set the epic tone versus the war story that you're getting.
All right, Langland goes on here. Okay, so here's the last thing I want to talk about. I think it's kind of geeky because it involves a former doctor, David Tennant. I just learned recently that the Disney cartoon DuckTales is coming back. I used to watch that show as a kid a lot, but what really got me surprised is that David Tennant is going to voice Scrooge McDuck, and that is awesome. That is indeed awesome.
Yeah, no, and it's like Danny Pudi's playing.
Danny Pudi's in it, too.
He's playing Huey. Ben Schwartz is another one of the brothers. I forget who's playing. And Horatio Sands?
Kate,
no.
Kate
no,
from
Bobby
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's playing Webby. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Kate McCooch, so, yeah.
Good voice cast.
And Bobby Moynihan, I think, is the third one of the brothers. I think it's Danny Pudi, Ben Schwartz, and Bobby Moynihan are playing Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
It's such a good cast. It's
oh, my God.
Good cast.
And, hey, a person with an actual Scottish accent playing Scrooge McDuck.
It's going to be neat. Anyways, I'm excited for that, and I wanted to share about it. All that is all I have to say. I hope you don't mind me being in the sponsor. I wanted episode 88 because that number is quite close to me. As you can see, it's in my email address that only you guys can see. It's true. I can verify this. Also, I want to share that I typed this on my brand new computer that my brother and I have built together. Have an awesome holiday season, all of you. And Fur, I wish you the best on your future endeavors from Langland. Thank you, Langland, for writing into us.
Yes, and happy holidays, Langland.
Indeed, indeed.
Right.
I did just get a text from Archimius apologizing that he didn't write in, but he wanted me to tell everyone happy holidays. I just thought you'd all want to know that.
Archimius, you can tell people happy holidays yourself. You don't need us to do it for you. So it's not a relay service. All right, so that brings us to the final segment of our show. And that is, of course, the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. And that is, this is the part of the show where every episode I read a little part of a book. And the challenge to you, the listener or viewer, is to guess what book it is. Now, if you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. One, you get your name read aloud every episode. Two, you get listed on the website. That's it. Because it's a fun, free game for everybody in pants. All right. So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Archimedes, Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slitheredy, The Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lulisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, The Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. Sean Orange. You know, Fur, once you leave the show, you could play along this game, too.
I could.
All right. So,
not saying I will, but I could.
So we've been reading from the same book for a little while, and I'm going to read yet another line for it. As we've been doing this one for a while, I'm going to read a longer line than I normally had before. All right.
Two lines, perhaps. No.
These speeches, suggesting some slight eccentricities in the regulation of Mr. Green's household, seem to offer hope of an explanation. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, click on that contact form, and tell us what it is. Or if you'd like to, you know, say anything else, complain about anything else, if you want to send Fur a final message for his last episode on January 1st, do
on
that.
On New Year's Day, which I will sing nothing. I will only speak in lyrics from U2's New Year's Day on New Year's Day. That's all I'm going to do.
Go fill out that contact for, do the thing, be the people that you are, that you can be, that you could never be, that you dream to be in your moments of peace and silence in which you are screaming inside your head. Do
it. Something like that. Yeah. Well, as always, thank you again for joining all of us on another fortnight of Nerd and Tie. We love having you here. As always, subscribe to us on Stitcher and iTunes and now Google Play. Do all that stuff. Rate, review us. Let us know that you love us. And, yeah, we will see you guys in a fortnight. For Nerd and Ty, I am Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
Have a wonderful fortnight, everybody, and have a very, very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you.
Dance party. Do 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 do.